I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Roger Grimes, Data-Driven Defense Evangelist for KnowBefor, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about KnowBefor, visit KnowBefor.com. Roger, welcome. Always great to be speaking with you.
Yeah, I'm always glad to be back. You always have lots of interesting topics and things to talk about.
Well, I think we have a very interesting topic to cover off on together today because, Roger, you wrote the book, Hacking Multi-Factor Authentication, which is available on Amazon. And in doing so, you reviewed over 150 different MFA solutions. And we hear folks in the industry say constantly that the number one thing consumers can do to protect themselves is to enable MFA. And we'll get into some other claims or statements, what have you, in a little bit. But to start off, what did you find during your research into those 150 different solutions?
Well, I think, I found out there's a lot of different types of MFA that work differently. None are perfect. All are hackable. I can hack every single solution at least a couple of different ways, most of them 10 or more ways. And it's not necessarily flaws in implementation. It's just the nature of the solution many times. There are even some that are too secure. Like you have these solutions where, you know, it's like some five-factor solution where they literally have users solving math problems and stuff, or using a code sheet to look up a code to put in. You're like, no one's going to use that. But also, probably one of the more surprising things was that the vast majority of MFA solutions, and by vast majority, I mean somewhere between 80 and 90%, can be bypassed or hacked by a simple looking phishing email. Like literally you get sent an email, you click on a link and you think you're going somewhere, but you're not, you're going somewhere else. And it can either hack your MFA solution or bypass it like it's not even there. And I think anytime I show people, I often show people a demo of it being done. Our chief hacking officer at KnowBefor has some great demos on this. And when I show them a demo of how easy it is, I think without a doubt to anyone that has never seen it, their jaws drop. They can't believe how easy it is to get away. You know, like people have this misconception that MFA makes them super unlikely to get hacked or makes them far less likely to get hacked. And it just isn't true. The most you can say about MFA is that it significantly reduces some forms of authentication attacks. And that's it. But people, when they get one, the senior management, the end users, the administrators that are deploying it have this misconception that it provides far more protection than it does.
Interesting. And speaking of providing more protection than it does, I have two examples of blogs to read to you. So first, on Google's security blog, an article was published titled, "New Research, How Effective is Basic Account Hygiene at Preventing Hijacking?" And in this article, Google shares the following. Our research shows that simply adding a recovery phone number to your Google account can block up to 100% of automated bots, 99% of bulk phishing attacks, and 66% of targeted attacks that occurred during our investigation. If you've signed into your phone and set up a recovery phone number, we can provide a similar level of protection to two-step verification via device-based challenges. We found that an SMS code sent to recovery phone number helped block 100% of automated bots, 96% of bulk phishing attacks, and 76% of targeted attacks. On device prompts, a more secure replacement for SMS helped prevent 100% of automated bots, 99% of bulk phishing attacks, and 90% of targeted attacks. And then similarly, Microsoft published an article on their security blog titled, "One Simple Action You Can Take to Prevent 99.9% of Attacks on Your Accounts," where they share the following. You can help prevent some of these attacks by banning the use of bad passwords, blocking legacy authentication, and training employees on phishing. They had listed prior to that a few of large-scale attacks. However, one of the best things you can do is to just turn on MFA by providing an extra barrier and layer of security that makes it incredibly difficult for attackers to get past. MFA can block over 99.9% of account compromise attacks. With MFA, knowing or cracking the password won't be enough to gain access. to learn more, read your password doesn't matter. So, Roger, with all that you just shared and all that you know about the ability to hack MFA, what do you think about these statements that MFA can block 99% of hacks and potentially 99 to 100% of bot attacks?
Yeah, you know, so those studies have been out a while. And let me say, they're being leveraged and reamplified by all kinds of media, even the cybersecurity insurance industry. Like I've seen presentations that say MFA blocks 99% of ransomware attacks. And let me just say, those statements are not true. Some of the statements by those vendors that they said were either oversimplified, only talking about particular scenarios, like, you know, the last one, you know, from Microsoft, MFA can block over 99.9% of account compromises. Like, people like forget seeing that word. So the MFA can only protect you against certain types of authentication attacks. So it only works. There's lots of different ways you can be attacked. Matter of fact, in my data-driven defense book and things I've been talking about for 20 years, I identify 10 separate different types of attacks. There's social engineering, unpatched software, authentication attacks, eavesdropping, physical attacks, and that sort of stuff. So there's 10 different types of attacks. And MFA, which let me also say that you should use MFA where you can to protect valuable data. MFA can only help you, and it significantly reduces a large percentage, not the majority, but a large percentage of authentication attacks. So MFA, which is this, you know, identity token, hopefully it's 2FA. Sometimes what we call multi-factor authentication really is 1FA, and it really isn't that great. But let's say using MFA significantly stops many types of authentication attacks. So it really has no impact on like the other 9 types of attacks and only cuts a significant percentage out of the one type. Now, with that said, you know, if someone said, well, how much do you think MFA will protect? Like, if you look at all hacking, like, let me say MFA doesn't, if you have unpatched software, it's game over, you know? And sometimes the unpatched software that's being attacked is the software associated with MFA. But let's say that, you know, MFA doesn't stop eavesdropping attacks. It doesn't stop, unpatched software attacks. It doesn't stop, you know, all kinds of different attacks, insider attacks or whatever. But if someone was to say to me, how much percentage of hacking do you think MFA against all hacking attacks that the average organization faces? There's no real data out there. And the things that you just quoted me are just overly, they're talking about one type of attacks against their identity ecosystem only, and only for authentication attacks. Like Microsoft saying it stops all attacks would be like, hey, you can't get compromised because you're running unpatched Microsoft software. No, that would be silly. Mm-hmm. But if I was to say, okay, what's the percentage that MFA blocks out of all attacks? If I was just taking my best guess, and I've been looking at this for over 20 years, I would just guess like 25 to 30%, which is a significant portion. And because of that, you should use MFA. I can't find any hard data, though, and let me tell you, I'm trying to develop that data. But I talked to another person in my organization. Literally, all this guy does is look at email phishing attacks and social engineering. This guy, for 10, 15 years, all this guy has done is looked at social engineering attacks. And I said, wow. What do you think would be the percentage? And he said 20 to 40%.
Okay.
So about in my range. But let me say, in both our cases, it's not the majority,
right?
You know, that's the weird. And the weird thing is, like, if you're to better fight and mitigate social engineering, you would probably, according to stuff that we have data on, block 70 to 90% of all attacks, including most of the attacks that MFA would prevent. So if you just concentrate on MFA, let's say that you're blocking 30%, 40% of attacks. If you concentrate first and best on social engineering, you're probably going to block at least 50, if not 70 to 90% of the attacks. So that's probably the main thing here. Is I really do not think those statistics are taken in context. I think if you asked Microsoft, hey, do you mean like MFA can block 99% of all attacks?
Yeah.
No, they're actually being pretty specific and saying account compromised attacks. They're not thinking that MFA is going to stop somebody from abusing unpatched Windows or Microsoft software. And the other part is that as this world moves to more MFA, and it's moving to more MFA very quickly, the attackers are just going to simply move to more often to methods that attack or bypass MFA. Like, so right now, I can send you a simple phishing email that gets around your MFA like it wasn't there in 80 to 90% of all MFA solutions. And it's used today by hackers all the time, but maybe it's in only in about, you know, let's say 20, 30% of attacks. They're just going to make it 100% of those emails if everybody goes to MFA.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think your point of these statements living within each respective identity ecosystem is interesting to note, as well as the specifics that they quoted and how that then gets taken and just grows legs and just takes off in a way that perhaps wasn't intended. I think that's a really great distinction. My next question for you, though, is do you think that the fact that they're promoting push-based MFA helps, at least in some capacity?
Yeah, so I think push-based MFA is where you're logging in, usually, you know, on a website or something or an application, and then usually you get this approval prompt that gets sent to your phone saying, "Hey, is this you logging into this app or this website? Yes or no, approve or deny," something like that. Well, again, all MFA I think is helpful. Although, let me say this, that I've recently changed my opinion about. I used to put push-based authentication in the higher echelon of MFA, because it's if you're using phone-based MFA, it's better than SMS, short messaging service-based MFA. That's among the weakest MFAs. It's using a vendor's application. They're usually sending you some type of information that you can help identify that it's your login, and hopefully would prevent man-in-the-middle attacks or something. Well, I've recently changed that because, it happened a couple weeks ago, I heard from a security provider that went to a ransomware attack that was in the Midwest. And they said that in this attack, the VP of that company had approved the push-based notification over 20 times, even though the approvals were being asked, were coming in from, when they look back at the data, from other countries. So showing that they're coming in from Russia. This VP was not logging in actively. They were at times at home, at dinner, at night, on the weekends. And when they asked this VP, "Why did you approve these approvals 20 times?" The VP said, "Because y'all told me that I'm supposed to push approve." And I realized that it was just a little slip up in training, that everybody was focused on making sure that all the employees could just get logged in. Hey, here's this new thing. It protects us. And if you want to log in, when you log in, it's going to say approve or deny, and you should say approve. They either didn't share or didn't emphasize enough that, hey, when you're not logging in, don't click on approve.
Right.
You know? And so when I learned this, I then talked to another security provider, and they went, "Yep." And then I decided to call some penetration red teams that I know. And they all said that push-based notification is so easy to hack, to bypass, because everyone's just pushing the approval prompt, that one of the guys said, "My team, when we hear that someone has push-based notification or Office 365, he said Office 365 with push-based notification, we just laugh." He goes, "It's so, especially Microsoft's promoting this passwordless base, which is really 1FA. You don't even have a login name and password. Okay. It's just you go there or you put in your login name and then there's no additional second credential. You just hit approve." He said, "We basically just log in as everybody. And then we get," he said, this one guy said, 3 out of 5 people hit approve.
Oh,
he
wow.
said, "It's like walking up to a New York City apartment building, hitting all the, you know, all the buzzers on the front of it and just waiting for all the people to let you in." He said, "There's someone always waiting on a pizza guy."
Yeah.
And then after I shared this story with some people in Spiceworks, a forum, a really great forum, like it was like person after person, admin coming back to me going, "Yes, yes, yes. Like, this is so true. This happened to me. I had an IT director that did it. I had a VP, a CIO, a CISO, a CEO do it." Even one person, one of the best stories I heard was this one person said, "Listen, I had to roll out push-based notification to 1,000 blue-collar workers." He said, we actually had to train some of the blue collar workers on how to use, we had to get them and train them on how to use a smartphone.
Right.
Because, you know, so you're looking at people in the field doing, you know, tough jobs.
Yeah.
He said, and it turned out that they didn't know how to do it. Even after they were trained, many of them ended up modifying their phone approval messages so it would be forwarded to their boss, who would approve them because the boss knew how to approve them. And the boss would get multiple push notifications every day, and he would just start approving everything sent his way.
Right.
So then the IT people said, listen, you can't do that. That, you know, you have, the person has to know that it's them logging in. You can't log in for somebody else. You need to let them log in. And you certainly can't do this auto approval because the manager is getting multiple prompts every day. And he's like, yes, yes, yes. So they admonished him. And they went back, and a couple months later, he had secretly started doing it again. And he's like, hey, I just need my guys to do their work.
Right.
And so that's what you have to understand about all MFA. It is seen as an unwanted, necessary evil. And just human nature, you're going to think you have this really great, like, when you and I look at push-based, we're like, man, it really is awesome. There is a large segment of any user population, and if you're listening, in your company, that will just not care and will kind of ignore that they're not logging in when they approve it. Like even when they're told don't do it, if it's slowing them down, they're going to secretly bypass it. You know, and let me say this, a lot of places using push-based notification, thousands of places have been compromised by ransomware. I've spent my career, the whole reason I'm kind of on this, hey, I want to educate people about MFA, is that I spent 20 years of my career installing multi-factor authentication solutions, not full-time, but a large part of my career. I believe that I've probably installed more MFA solutions than most people that I meet. And most of the time, I wasn't invited to install those solutions until they'd been compromised one or more times, usually multiple times. And that's why I'm in there putting this multi-factor authentication solution. What I noticed is that every single company that I helped install MFA on was still hacked. How were they hacked? Usually social engineering and unpatched software.
Yeah.
And I literally became depressed because I'm like, oh my God, I'm not really, like, I think I'm helping them. I'm increasing the security to help them, but they're still getting hacked. How? The same ways that they've been hacked for 30 years. And literally, it's why I quit that current job and came to KnowBe4. Like, a lot of times I push fighting social engineering. People are like, of course, he works for KnowBe4. You know, that's, they sell anti-social engineering software and services. No, no. I'm at KnowBe4 because they're fighting the better fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And so, speaking of fighting that better fight and education, that was great advice that you just gave, but I'd love to hear more from you, Roger, to kind of wrap up our conversation of what should we be telling both consumers and corporations about how MFA factors into their cybersecurity solution? Because regardless of statistics, what have you, it's still a part of that ecosystem, to your point. So what should we be telling them?
Yes, that's a great question. So one is, I say there's no perfect panacea, right? There's no magic panacea. If you just did just fighting social engineering, that wouldn't be enough. So what I tell people is you should use MFA where you can to protect valuable data. Now, you're not going to be able to use it in a lot of places. The most popular MFA solutions don't work with 2% of the world's websites and services. Most of us are actually probably using multiple forms of MFA and different types of MFA, one for work, maybe if you have it at work, one for a bank, and you get all these SMS messages all the time. And if you log into your Facebook, Twitter, Instagram account, you get another one. And we have a ton of passwords.
Yeah.
So if you want to protect yourself, this is what I say. Three things. Try your best to mitigate social engineering using the best combination of policies, technical defenses, and education that you can. And education is typically the weak link. Use MFA where you can. Use strong, unique passwords on every website and service that are unique for every website and service. Use a password manager if you can. And then thirdly, do perfect patching on the types of applications that are most likely to be hacked by hackers, which means, you know, your operating systems, your browser add-ins, Microsoft Office, your VPN software. You know, like, it's amazing, like, over the last year because of COVID and work from home issues, there's been this huge push to VPNs. Sending people home and they're, get a VPN. I don't think VPNs are nearly as protective as most people think because clients are being compromised, as client-side compromise. They're in. When you have a client-side compromise, it gets past the firewall, it gets past the VPN. It's because they're in the context of a authorized user, it gets past the MFA. But what's weird is that the use of VPNs has led to the attackers, ransomware attackers particularly, in looking for and attacking unpatched VPNs. So it turns out when you install VPNs, you have VPN software on both client and servers, and you have to keep that up to date. Well, this increased use of VPNs means there's more unpatched VPNs out there, and ransomware attackers in particularly have turned their focus to look, oh, they've got Cisco VPN, they've got this VPN, let's go see if it's patched. And many times they're finding that it's not patched. Or they're sending phishing links pretending to be from IT about something related to a VPN. Or, hey, we're sending you a VPN update. You need to apply this right away or your business connection is going to be cut. I mean, so it's funny. Every defense brings along with it additional attack vectors and weaknesses, and MFA and VPNs are no different. And when you bring in a solution, you should educate people about this thing. Like, and the probably the biggest problem with MFA, besides people thinking it's some magic bullet, is that senior management is kind of promised that MFA is going to be a magic bullet. This is what we need to get. It's going to stop all 99% of all hacking, right? And they're just going to be set up for a disappointing result. The administrators, most of the time, aren't really clear about how the MFA can so easily be bypassed or attacked. They're literally struggling with getting their end users just to get it working. So they're spending more of their time, more of their training, just trying to get the end user to use it successfully. And the whole message of, hey, maybe you shouldn't hit approve when it's not you logging in, either falls on deaf ears, isn't communicated, falls on deaf ears, or just isn't emphasized enough, or let me say, just ignored. And then, you know, it's, That's probably the biggest message I can say, that the couple things. Just realize that MFA is not a magic bullet. These people telling you that it's 99% effective or whatever, or 80% effective, take it with a grain of salt, just like you have to every time you hear an antivirus vendor tell you that they detect 100% of all malware. I mean, I just want to laugh. You know, it's just not true. There are no magic bullets. And the biggest lesson I've learned is people that think it's a magic bullet, and let me say, this is the vast majority of people that are using MFA and are deploying MFA, think it kind of has this greater protective ability than it does, because they're being told by Microsoft and Google it does.
Sure, yeah.
And then when it doesn't, they're shocked. I mean, people are shocked when their push-based notifications actually used against them. And let me say this, this whole idea that push-based, if you do single factor push-based authentication, I'm telling you, you should go back to login name and password. That's safer.
Yeah.
So that's it, is, you know, just be aware that, you know, that things can be attacked. And if I was to implement MFA today, I would make sure that I spend a great deal of my time communicating to senior management what it does and doesn't protect against, because I ran into many instances where management would go, oh, now we got MFA. We don't have to worry about, you know, this APT, Advanced Persistent Threat. And I'm like, that's not true. Or make sure that you actually educate yourself and your end users, like, hey, if you get an email, you still need to pay attention to where that link goes. Because if you click on the wrong link, it can take you to a fake website where you think you're going, and you'll use your MFA, but they're just going to capture your code and use it on the real website. Like, literally just taking 15 minutes to educate them that you still have to, you can't throw your brain out just because you're using MFA. But let me say, I've probably given my How to Hack MFA webinar probably 200 or 300 times over the last 2 years. And every time I show the video of Kevin Mitnick hacking around MFA, I wish I could have a camera in the room. It is stunned silence with mouths dropping open. And I probably get 10% of those people emailing me later on saying, I had no idea how easy it was to bypass.
Wow. Yeah. You should have like a little, have everyone sign a waiver before they attend your webinar, and then you can film their reactions.
And it's, you know, even I think a lot of people talking about how great MFA are have not actually been people deploying MFA. When I talk to real live sysadmins that have deployed MFA, let me tell you, they know reality, and there's nobody bragging about how great it is.
Interesting. Well, that's reassuring, I guess, in some capacity, you know, but awesome. Well, Roger, as always, a great conversation with you on a really important subject and very timely. So I thank you for making the time to join us. And just always a pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for letting me. I think this is, I have said it as clearly about MFA as I've ever said concisely and clearly. You don't even have to come to my webinar now, apparently. But, you know, use it where you can. Just don't think it's magic.
Excellent. Thank you, Roger. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Roger Grimes, Data-Driven Defense Evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. And to learn more about our sponsor, KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com, and you can keep up with all of our media at cybercrimemagazine.com.